Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission.
Derek Grier served as a Republican in the Missouri House of Representatives from 2016 through 2022. I had the pleasure to visit Grier just before he passed the torch and returned to the private sector. He's now continuing his trendsetting role as the visionary owner of the Realty One Group, based in Crèvecœur, Missouri, just 20 minutes from St. Louis. Come along and join Grier as he shares his game-changing evolutions in the real estate industry and a look back at his 10 years of service in state and local government.
My name is Derek Grier.
You've been going 10 years, right?
That's right. City council first and then state representative for 6 years. So I am now coming back home to my family and our business and going to focus on doing some good there.
Very cool. Any specific dreams or visions or things that you hope to jump into?
Oh, from here? From politics? Oh, gosh. My wife and I, we own a real estate brokerage, and it was Entrepreneur's number one real estate company in the entire country last year.
What?
They had no presence here in St. Louis and St. Charles, so we have brought them to the region, and we are extremely excited about sharing the vision that they have. Real estate, the whole industry is changing dramatically right now, and we're in the process of kind of leading that charge with the Realty One Group is the name of it.
Give us an example. In what ways is the majority of change happening now?
Oh, well, technology is one, and supporting agents. Now, where clients used to want to go with a really big name, a legacy brand, that was the most important thing. Now they want to go with the person that they like, they know, and they trust, right? And so the brokerage name doesn't matter as much. What matters is, are the agents being supported in a way that they can be more successful? And so the commission structure is a big piece of that, allowing agents to keep more of what they earn and giving them the resources, the coaching, the support that they need to do really well.
An interesting dynamic that I've noticed traveling around the country, a lot of brick and mortar real estate offices are closed or closing.
Yes.
And I went, ooh, is this a declining industry? And then I did the math and I go, no, I bet it's because the agents and the brokers are working from home, basically working on the computer.
Yes.
So they don't need that physical desk anymore.
Yes,
is that true?
Absolutely, absolutely. Real estate is a business now where you can do it pretty much from anywhere. And you are serving your clients and on their schedule, and you can do a lot of the paperwork and all the other stuff from anywhere you want. So an office then becomes really building the culture and a collaborative environment. So I was in a meeting just this week, it was fascinating. We were with CBRE, which is one of the biggest companies in the world, right?
Yeah.
And one of their top folks in space planning, so in creating office space, right, and designing that. So some of the biggest companies in the world go to this guy and say, hey, how do we design an office that's going to support our employees, that they're going to want to be at our office and working there? And they were showing us about how they're creating these environments that, you know, purposefully put people together, you know, and create that collaboration. And they've got all these like casual spaces where people can go and just sort of sit on couches and hang out and talk and have conversations. So the whole dynamic of work is changing dramatically, especially since COVID. It was already trending that way, but that just really pushed it over the edge. And if companies want to get employees back to the office, they've got to make it something that's more unique, more special than going down the road to Starbucks or working from their home office.
But part of the dynamic historically anyway in the real estate industry on the residential level is that personal interaction, friendship with your agent.
Yes.
Where you meet up in person and they drive you in their car to view the property and whatnot. Has that model changed?
No, that is probably the most important aspect of an agent's success, is creating that relationship with people and that trust, building that trust, and then having the skills and the knowledge to be able to support their goals and what they want to do, right? Mm-hmm. You still have to be able to do the job. You have to be able to help them sell their house for the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time.
But
right?
10 years ago, how I would find an agent might be walking into Coldwell Banker's brick and mortar, you know, and whoever greets me first might become my agent.
That's right.
That model doesn't exist now. So how does the agent, what's your best recommendation for harvesting, meeting clients?
Utilize technology that's out there. You've got to find your clients where they are. Mm-hmm. So, and right now, where are people? They're on their phones constantly, right? So you have to have a presence on social media. It's one of the first things that we help our agents with.
So what social media models work the best? What vehicles?
I think it depends on who your audience is. So if you're in the younger generation, if you're working with first-time home buyers, mm-hmm. they're all on TikTok.
Really? The realtors on TikTok?
TikTok, yeah, absolutely. Wow. And the young professionals are on TikTok, right? And next is probably Instagram. Right. You probably get the millennials more are in the Instagram category. Some of the older generations are still on Facebook, so that's an important medium to use as well.
So you have to have every vehicle operative. It's kind of like the Taiwanese plate spinners.
Yes, yes, and you've got to be relevant, and you've got to have content that is, I mean, people are scrolling through their phones. They're spending 3 or 4 hours a day on their phones, and they're spending an average of 2 seconds on each thing that comes up there,
so
right?
So you got to be locked and loaded to catch their attention.
That's
have
right.
you watched any TikToks to see what got you, what you thought was cool that people were doing?
I do it all the time. I copy what other people are doing all the time, too. And I tell our agents, do the same thing. Find other agents that are successful at getting views and successful at getting that interest. And just take their idea and tweak it a little bit.
So in the industry, again, there are a lot. It's amorphous. It's fluid. It's changing before your eyes.
Absolutely it is. Yeah. Yeah, very quickly.
Where is it going?
I think you're going to see a lot more brokerages that are really strongly focused on the agents themselves and the agent experience. The technology, the coaching, having a personal relationship with your broker, a broker that's there for you and supporting you. You know, most agents don't need a broker too often, but when you need a broker, you need a broker. And I tell the story about I was over on a trade mission in the UK with the governor of Missouri earlier this year. And I've never been to London before. We were in London. We're walking by Buckingham Palace. And I get a call from my agent. Now it's like 6:30 at night, you know, and here we are. I'm with the governor and we're walking down the street. Think I took the call?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I took the call because that's my number one priority. If they call me and they know I'm in London, they know I'm there, right? So it's got to be important. I pick up the phone and I help them. And it only took me 5 or 6 minutes to answer their question, get them on track.
That's really cool. Okay, before we go, let's reel back in your life. You've been a state representative for quite a long time. What are you most proud of accomplishment, and what is your kind of unaccomplished frustration?
The thing I'm most proud about is setting an example for my kids of contribution and giving back to their communities. That was one of my big goals in getting involved in politics, was to contribute and try and improve my community, and I feel like I've done that. And I feel like my kids can look at the example that I've set for them of being ethical, having integrity, of speaking your mind when you need to, and standing up to forces that maybe are trying to do things that aren't so good. I think I'm most proud of that. I mean, the legislation and the laws that I've passed, you know, those are proud accomplishments as well, but I think you ask what the most proud I am is of setting that example.
Okay. And your biggest frustration, unaccomplished things that you had hoped you could take out in your term?
Politics is a machine, and I had, like many people going into politics, high hopes of being able to change the way things are done, right? And trying to shake things up and change the system. And it's just very, very difficult to do that. And oftentimes that machine will run you over if you step out of line and you're not that cog they want you to be in their wheel. They just want to bulldoze you over and eliminate you as opposition. So it's difficult for people that are in politics that want to do the right thing and they want to stand up for what they believe in. It can often be very challenging to do that.
I think a senator does not have the local presence that a representative does by the definition of your term.
Absolutely.
You represent your constituency.
Yes.
So you're on the front lines. The only one that's closer on the front lines would be a mayor or a city councilman.
Yes.
But you're right there, too.
Yes, yes.
And that puts you in the firing line. I've interviewed many mayors around the country, and the biggest eye roller is their lament is what they call the keyboard cowboys, the people that criticize and attack you that don't even have the guts to use their name.
Yes, last year, I guess it was 2 years ago now, my wife saw me on Twitter, and I would get so upset at people that were making comments, derogatory comments about me, and I felt this need to engage with them and fight back and tell them why they're wrong and
get
what I'm doing is
dirt.
Good, yeah. And she took my phone, and she took my phone and she deleted Twitter off of my phone, and I haven't been on Twitter since then, and I tell you, it was one of the best decisions I have ever made. You just can't pay attention to those naysayers.
And they are out there. It's their only power and control moment in their life. They're out there to take you down and have glee for doing it.
Yes, yeah. That is right. That is right. So you just can't give them that power.
No.
And the only way you take that power away from them is don't pay attention. Yep. Don't respond.
Yep. Delete, delete.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So very interesting. Do-over. If you had to enter politics now, but you never had before, what would you target? What would you want to do?
I'm not sure I would do a whole lot different. I feel very good about the experience that I had, honestly. One of the best pieces of advice I got was to find something to be an expert in so that everybody had to come to you when that issue came up. And I found that early on. I was very fortunate. I was actually standing on the deck of the Teddy Roosevelt aircraft carrier, and I was talking to the senior security officer for the whole ship, watching F-18 planes take off and land, right? Amazing. I was living Top Gun for a few minutes. And I asked the guy, how old are the people on this deck right now? They look really young. And he told me they were 19. Mm-hmm. The average age was 19. And I had just learned how with occupational licenses, so we're getting into the weeds here a little bit, real sexy subject we're talking about. And in Missouri, like many states, one out of every four jobs requires an occupational license, permission from the government to do that work, right? And many of those jobs and those certifications and licenses have arbitrary age restrictions.
Oh, really?
Yes. Right. So, for instance, in Missouri, you can't move a toilet as a master plumber until you're 25. No matter whether you've done all the training, passed all the tests.
That's wrong. That's crazy.
It is. So occupational licensing became the thing that I was the expert on. And I was a national expert just over the last couple of years. You know, I've been on podcasts and all kinds of interviews and talking about this subject. And I was able to pass a law that got me to the White House to celebrate what I had done. It was the most comprehensive regulatory reform bill in the country.
So a licensed plumber that's 18 can now...
You know what? You asked what my greatest frustration was. You might have touched on it because the way that the legislative process works, we got all the way through the House, the Senate. I had unanimous support for this bill that I was passing because it was going to do so much good. And at the last minute, there was a senator who was retiring that came to me and said, my whole family are electrical contractors, and unless you exempt them, I'm going to kill your bill.
Wow.
And she ended up exempting all of the trades, which need my bill more than any other professions out there. They need what I was doing,
right.
And I could never get them back into that bill. I couldn't do it. So for the last 2 years, I pounded my head against the wall, fighting against some of these trades, because it's all about barriers to entry. It's all about keeping competition out, and that's so frustrating.
Wow. Tell us for a moment before you go. It's an uncomfortable subject because it symbolizes our state of the state in America today. And we talked earlier before we rolled tape about cross-aisle politics. And in so many ways, that's the best hope for getting anything accomplished.
Yes, we have got to take the vitriol out of what we're doing in politics and the attacks. And I know it's nothing new. I mean, if you look back at 200 years ago in the House of Representatives for the United States, I mean, there were fist fights and all kinds of brawls that would break out, and duels. I mean, literal duels where people would shoot each other dead, you know, for disagreeing.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's nothing new, but I think if we're going to heal as a country and come together, we've got to respect where other people are coming from. And I believe very strongly that if you talk to someone long enough, you ought to be able to come up with some shred of understanding of why they believe what they believe, even if you disagree vehemently about
Find
it.
Find some common threads somewhere.
Yes.
You're a Republican representative.
I am.
Have you established some working relationship with some of the Democrats.
I sure have. Mm-hmm. Yep. In fact, that bill that I just mentioned to you, it ended up having unanimous support in the Senate. So Democrats and Republicans mm-hmm. coming together. One of my favorite people in the House working with is Tracy McCreary, a Democrat from Ladue. And she just does a tremendous job. She's like me. She believes in ideas. She believes in getting past all of the politics and figuring out what the best policy is for people. Mm-hmm. And when you don't care who gets the credit, you can get so much done.
That's really cool. Somebody wants to learn more about your world, how would somebody follow you?
Absolutely. So on Facebook, you can follow me at Derek.Grier7. That's my Facebook handle. And on Instagram, it's just Derek Grier. If you want to look at our real estate company, you would go to joinrogdominion.com. That's our company real estate website.
Thanks, Derek, so much. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Missouri. We'll see you here.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by the Foundation at Hearst Castle, where donors and members experience exclusive events that recreate what it was like to be a guest of William Randolph Hearst, from swimming in the iconic Neptune Pool to dining in Hearst's private guesthouse overlooking the Pacific Ocean. The Foundation at Hearst Castle's ongoing mission is to support the conservation and restoration of Hearst Castle while offering youth programs for underserved students, preserving the past and inspiring future generations of dreamers. These children experience a world of science, technology, engineering, art, and math at Hearst Castle, STEAM, along with studying the legacy of Julia Morgan, one of the most important women in the history of engineering and architecture. The foundation at Hearst Castle not only changes the lives of children, but also provides lifetime memories and unrivaled experiences for our generous donors and members. Discover how you can become a member by going to foundation@hearstcastle.com and learn how you can support this unique and invaluable mission. You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.